Okay, this is a final hour. We're going to take phone calls with Steve Martin and James Gardner in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Steve, something tells me in your book, Cosmic Conversations, that you had more material than you knew what to do with, huh?
Oh, boy. I mean, it was such a tough decision about what to edit out and what to include. And I was sorry I couldn't include all the richness of the conversations in the final version of the book.
How about you, James? When you put together The Intelligent Universe, did it flow easy for you, or was it a lot of work?
It really was. To be very honest, it was a lot of work. It's the toughest thing I've ever done as an intellectual task. And I think it's just because when you really are trying to probe and think outside the box, you're going against the grain, and you have to sort of force yourself to clear your mind and to think afresh.
What did you mean by the selfish biocosm?
You know, that's a very good question. That idea is meant to convey the thought that our universe, as well as its predecessor and successor universes, are replicators or reproducers, in the same sense that Richard Dawkins conveyed the idea that genes are selfish replicators. In neither case are genes or universes literally selfish in the human emotional sense. They're simply bent upon self-replication. They're bent upon reproduction. That's what economists call their utility function. That's what they do. They reproduce.
Okay, let's go to the calls now. Javier, west of the Rockies, La Puente, California. He's been holding a while. Javier.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. Good to have you with us.
Yes, I wanted to ask you something that I have. It's as far as ourselves, I've heard a lot of good questions being asked, and it's like one thing that I say is us as human beings, that we see our God as we know him, and I believe that, wonder if, like, the universe would be our God, like our God, you know, which they say is God is the beginning and the end. And us that live in it, that, you know, we're kind of like reincarnation. Like just like you were saying about the universe, it keeps going ever on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way I see it is maybe that's what we're just like here on like borrowed time just till we, I guess, we pass on to the next, to the spiritual form. And I guess that's when we see that we'll be with God, and we'll just, that's being part of the universe. Ourselves just being reincarnated, just like the universe is.
Well, there is that connection. How important is consciousness, James Gardner, to this equation?
It's totally, totally important. The consciousness plays a truly mysterious but extremely profound role in quantum mechanics, for instance. And in fact, one of the scientists that I've talked about in some of my more recent work, John Archibald Wheeler, who was a famous physicist, is a famous physicist, very elderly now, suggests that the universe is actually summoned into existence through the act of observation by human and other observers, that there is no universe until it is observed. And that's kind of a radical thought, but it's this is a mainstream guy, and from his perspective, it's the quintessential act of creation, conscious observation.
Steve Martin, who created the creator?
Good question. And you know, is there a need for that, or can it just simply happen out of its own spontaneity? I mean, it's the chicken and egg question. I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And we really don't know, and we don't even know if that's the right question to ask. Does that question even make sense at the larger scales of the universe that we're talking about?
What do you think, James Gardner?
Well, I actually have an essay that talks about what are called closed time-like curves, that it's possible that the universe can be its own mother, because Einstein's theory allows time essentially to become a kind of circular entity that curves back upon itself. So that the the past can certainly exert a causal influence on the future, but the future can, in a strange sense, also cause the past. So this is the idea. There was another Princeton physicist, Richard Gott, who said, maybe this means that the universe can actually be its own mother, can create itself.
That's very possible. Let's go to Matt in Oklahoma City. Hey, Matt, thanks for calling.
Hey, George, it's an honor to be on the show. It's my third time calling. I'd just like to say again, I think you're serving a noble purpose to open up the minds of everyone.
We will do the best.
Okay. I had a question for your guest. I just wanted to say I live in the Bible Belt, you know, and I'm around a lot of religious people, and I get in these debates with them sometimes about this because I have non-religious theistic beliefs. I've done my own meddling, and I've discovered my own proof through astral projection and everything. But I was just wondering what your guests would say if they were to get in a debate, what they would try to say to at least help others who may have more closed or structured beliefs to become open to new ideas.
Well, who wants that one?
I can speak to that because one of the people I interviewed was the Reverend Michael Dowd, who actually began his ministry as a fundamentalist preacher. And when he was told the story of the universe, this evolutionary story, as a sacred story, something in him caught fire. Right? In other words, his mind opened up. He had a conversion experience. He left his ministry, and for the past 7 years, he and his wife have traveled on the road preaching what he calls the gospel of evolution. So he's found his own way of basically bringing together science and spirituality in a mutually meaningful way for himself. And he believes that, you know, Christianity is part of the evolution of the universe. So he's still remained, you know, a faithful Christian, but he's opened up his viewpoint, his theology, to include Big Bang science as a part of that as well. And so I think he's an encouraging example of how people can actually bring the two together in a meaningful way.
Wasn't Charles Darwin somewhat spiritual as well?
He was, and it's interesting because he sort of he went through various periods in which it was in some ways it was very painful for him to write The Origin of Species because he really was torn between what amounted to a purely materialistic explanation of the evolutionary process and a kind of prior view, which was very much informed by religious sensibilities. The other great scientist, of course, who was profoundly religious, even mystically religious, was Newton. Newton, it's often not recognized, but he actually spent more time and wrote more pages about religious topics than he did about gravitation.
Let's go to first-time caller in Baltimore, Maryland. Les, go ahead, Les.
Good morning. How are you doing? Hi, George. I love your show.
Thank you.
I wanted to speak on the when they were talking about the birth of universes and everything. It's a lot of the way I feel about it. I feel that as the universes are, like, born from galaxies, when you have like super massive black holes, and as they collect the material and everything, and how it goes down into the black hole itself, it collects after a period of time, and then it's like ejected into another reality or another universe, the birth of another universe, as you might say. And I feel like that our consciousness that you were talking about actually comes from maybe DNA, you might say, from worlds that may have been collected by a black hole and then over a period of time re-manifested back into the new universe as us in the birth of our universe that manifests itself after a period of time, billions of years.
Well, let's get James's thoughts on this. James, black holes creating other universes?
You know, that's a very astute question, because that's precisely the theory that Lee Smolin, a very prominent cosmologist, has, that black holes are essentially the gateways to new universes. And his work was really the precursor, the inspiration for my first book. My first book is essentially it builds upon Smolin's thoughts, and that's one of the possibilities. There are other possibilities for how a baby universe is born, but certainly that's a very mainstream concept, at least in the area of speculative cosmology, that black holes are gateways to new baby universes.
Your first book, was it Life is the Architect of the Universe?
It's called Biocosm.
Biocosm was, okay.
Yep.
And then the book itself, Biocosm, what was the main theory about it?
Well, that was the book where I really articulated this concept that life and intelligence are the instruments by which the universe duplicates itself, and by which it acquires a kind of heredity principle, so that the duplication is not simply random, which is the more mainstream idea of what's called eternal chaotic inflation, but that there is a process by which what the caller referred to as the DNA of a pre-existing mother universe can be transmitted to progeny universes.
Okay, we go to St. Louis, Missouri. Marlene, go ahead.
Hello,
hi.
Gentlemen. I was having some wild dreams and woke up and heard you on the radio. So I knew I was supposed to get up and ask some questions.
Absolutely.
My question is, if the universe is an ever-changing organism, but pretty much flows in like its own kind of direction, are there antagonists, like different souls in the universe that can actually affect a change and take it in its own different course? If there are enough protagonists, or you know, what are your thoughts on that, Stephen James?
Steve?
Well, it's a good question, and we know that we're actually changing, you know, the evolution of the universe on a microscale. So, for example, humans are essentially directing the future of life on our planet. So in that sense, we're basically agents of evolution, you know, in our particular tiny part of the universe. Now, we don't think we have a big effect on the universe as a whole, but we're basically changing things where we are. And we sometimes forget that the universe isn't happening out there, but it's happening right here. It's happening right now on the radio. This is the universe, you know, happening in our living rooms, happening exactly where we are, and that evolutionary process is present at all aspects of it.
James Gardner, your thoughts?
Well, it's interesting. Just to echo what Steve was saying, you know, I have a little statement in my book in the acknowledgement of it, where I dedicate the book in part to the universe, and I say it is both as distant as the farthest star and as close as the nose on your face, because we are the universe, and we are a part and parcel of it, and we are the method by which it acquires consciousness and by which it thinks. So I think that this notion of the inseparability of human life and thought from cosmic processes is really at the heart of my vision.
What do you think, James, creates this intuitiveness that so many people share and have? What ties it together?
I think it's the very fact that we are an instrumentality. We're an expression of cosmic processes. You know, it's like the old song, we are the world, except in this case, we are the universe.
Let's go to Dale, truck driving in California. Hey, Dale, go ahead.
Sure. First of all, I want to thank the producers for having the insight to have the show on the previous night and the nights after. It was so wonderful, because otherwise, you know, you don't get it all. But I want to thank them for that. But
thanks.
My question is, the show you had on Tuesday night, we're talking about the Aryans and, you know, that we are genetically engineered. I was wondering what your guess with, you know, opinions on that would be, and being that there's supposed to be a solar flare coming and, you know, basically, you know, wiping out the Earth here and then having regenerating again, if they have any thoughts on that.
All right. James, what do you think of that? The fact that we were genetically altered by ETs?
Possible. There is another, there is an interesting, Paul Davies has a new book out called The Eerie Silence. It's about the fact that, you know, that, that it's, that there's no real verified instance yet of SETI succeeding. But he suggests that a really clever extraterrestrial intelligence might have embedded a message in junk portions of our DNA, and that's a place to actually look. So that would be a, that would be genetic engineering for the purpose of actually conveying a message or a signal. So I, you know, I, all of these are very speculative ideas, but the interesting thing is that mainstream scientists are really starting to think about them now.
Are you finding that the laws of physics are truly the same throughout the universe?
So far. And that's actually a very interesting question, and one of the cutting edge tasks is to see whether or not there are any subtle variations or any time dependent variations in the laws of physics. In other words, do those laws in any sense evolve? There have been some tantalizing hints that they might, but so far just hints. And so the mainstream viewpoint, and I think the one that I would share, is they appear to be uniform throughout the cosmos, which itself is a kind of a mystery. I mean, how is it that every electron is exactly identical to every other electron and that all are governed by these universal and very precise laws? That itself is a mystery that deserves thinking about.
It not only is it a mystery, James and Stephen, but it's also one of the paradoxes, I think, of the universe, because it is the basis, I think, for just about everything.
I agree.
I want you to, before we take a break and come back with final calls, James, let's get your website out. First of all, go ahead.
www.intelligentuniverse.org.
Steve, how about you?
Mine is www.cosmicconversations.org.
Do you both travel, speaking?
Yeah, I just this fall I was selected as the keynote speaker at the International Astronautical Congress, the SETI session, and it was a great delight. It was in Korea. Loved the country, and loved the opportunity.
That's super. Well, when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with the both of you. If you need to email me, that's just george@coasttocoastam.com. Don't forget, on our next Coast to Coast program, a very special guest, Edward Huslam, Dr. Mary's Monkey, how the unsolved murder of a doctor, a secret lab in New Orleans, and a cancer-causing monkey virus linked to Lee Harvey Oswald and the JFK assassination. Don't miss that. Back with final calls in a moment. StreamLink, you can sign up for it by going to coasttocoastam.com for just pennies a day. You get downloads, podcasting, past archives, iPhone apps, and a few more surprises thrown there as well. StreamLink, part of Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go to final calls now. White Plains, New York, we go. Bobby, take it away.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are y'all today?
Good, Bobby.
I'm a person who doesn't see any problem with creation and evolution coinciding. If you children, you don't teach them everything, you teach them what they need to know. And just because you prove about science doesn't mean that that's not how God does it. If you believe in God, then you think you would say that he's all powerful. So that will lead to believe that science will be encompassed under God. And I believe science started as a way to explain how, leading towards why. Somehow along the way, they became opposed to each other. When it comes to science, it's going to be limited by our own imagination and our own ability to fathom such. Unfortunately, certain things can't be fathomed under our own consciousness, so therefore you have to make a leap towards another level beyond you to understand certain things that can't explain, like the Big Bang or why a heart, how a heart actually starts or how the brain starts to function. And if you don't accept God, then you're going to be constantly limited and not be able to figure out what you're trying to prove.
And James, let's let you take that.
Well, you know, it's very interesting. This so-called dichotomy between science and religion really is a false dichotomy, because at the origin of science, this was very clearly demonstrated by a great British philosopher, Alfred North Whitehead. The reason that that modern science emerged in Western Europe is probably because it was a product of essentially medieval religion coupled with Greek philosophy, and it was the very idea that this irrational faith, if you will, in the rationality of the universe, a sort of a conviction that was based at the time on not very strong evidence that the universe was a rational entity that could be understood, essentially a religious conviction, that ironically is what led to the birth of science.
How about you, Steve?
Well, I think it's interesting that, you know, many people don't realize, but the Vatican actually has its own observatory where they have, you know, PhD astronomer, priest, scientists, and they're very well respected in their field. They're professional astronomers, and yet they're also deeply religious figures. So, I mean, it's not necessarily conflict, as James said. I mean, there are many ways to actually, you know, combine the two. And as he pointed out, they were together as part of this this process of understanding the nature of what we're involved in.
First-time caller in Huntington Beach, California. Keith, it's your turn. Hi, Keith.
How you doing, George?
All is well.
First of all, I want to say that you know, the American people love you, George. I definitely love you. And as a young man, I thank God for you tonight that you're here spreading truth, and you have wonderful guests tonight on to talk about these profound things. So my question to these two gentlemen, being that consciousness is the most fundamental aspect of positive change, being that these times I believe that this is the apocalypse, and for those people out there who don't know that, it simply means a time of revealing. What do you guys think that we can focus our conscience on, being that the powers that seem to want to have us in a negative state of mind? What do you think we can focus our conscience on in order to create positive change?
Positive change. Go ahead, Steve.
Well, I think, you know, and this came out of many of the conversations I had, is the world we want to live in is really the world we want to create. Now, in the end, it's really up to us. You know, we can't sit, you know, waiting around for God or extraterrestrial or something from the outside to come save us, because in the end, the future we live depends on the choices we make now. And so we have more power, more responsibility in terms of the kind of life and the kind of world we want to live in. We can start making choices by recognizing, you know, we're the agents of the future.
James Gardner?
Well, as I said in the concluding remarks in my interview that Steve conducted of me in his wonderful book, I believe that the central notion that is relevant to the question is that every creature and every intelligent entity plays some indefinable role in an awesome process by which intelligence gains hegemony over inanimate nature. And this implies that every living thing and every post-biological form of intelligence, for that matter, is linked together in a kind of joint endeavor of vast scope, and that we are actually soldiering on together. Bacteria, people, ETs, and hyper-intelligent computers pressing forward against all odds toward a distant future we can only imagine. We're the builders. We are the ancestors. We're the co-creators of the cosmos of the future.
Williams in Sacramento, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, you're on Coast to Coast, William.
Hi, George. I've been listening since Art Bell began, and I've always wanted to speak to one of you, and it's quite an honor.
Great. I'm glad you got through.
For your guests, I was just wondering, what do you think of the hypothesis that suggests that all this rather peculiar cosmological information about, you know, how things just happen to work out the way they do could be covered by the most parsimonious solution that we are actually living in a simulation.
Who wants that?
I'll take that one. That idea has gotten quite a bit of attention recently, and the basic idea is that it's if you look at this rather too perfect arrangement of physical laws and constants, it looks like a put up job, a kind of something that's been created, if you will. And I guess I don't see any hard and fast distinction between a universe that's essentially programmed to yield intelligence and life and a simulation. To my way of thinking, in either case, information and consciousness are the central phenomena. I'm not sure it really ultimately makes that much of a difference. It could be viewed either way.
All right, let's go back to Bruce now, Glen Burnie, Maryland. Hey, Bruce, thanks for calling. Go ahead, you're on Coast to Coast.
Thanks for taking my call, George.
Sure.
If the world as we know it wouldn't exist without the moon, and one of the theories about the moon is that two planets collided and a chunk of the Earth got blown off, and then the moon got caught in that orbit. If that's the case, then if we believe in intelligent design, did God have that figured out? You know what I'm saying?
Did he plan it, huh?
Right. Did he plan on the Earth getting having a collision and getting the moon and then forming Earth as we know it so that we can exist?
I don't think so. I think the God that so many people think about, I don't think he gets involved, she, in events like that. I think these events just happen. Jim, do you agree with that?
I do agree with you, though. It's interesting. There was a book a few years ago called Rare Earth, and it made the same point that the listener is commenting on, the caller is commenting on, that our unusually large moon, at least relative to the size of the Earth, may well be one of the key factors that allowed that yielded biological activity because of the effect on tidal flows and so forth. It's a very interesting theory, but I tend to agree with you that it's not. That's a level of micromanagement that I don't think is plausible.
We go to Louisville, Kentucky now. Jeff, take it away.
Oh, hi, George. Been a long time listener, about 15 years now. I'll try to make this as clear as I can. It's hard for me to explain sometimes, but I'm wondering if your guests have ever heard of this theory. Say, for example, there's a planet with three suns, and that planet never had nighttime. Well, that planet would never know that there are other stars out there, and that wouldn't know the rest of the universe. And I'm wondering, are there any theories that that say that maybe our planet is unique in that way somehow, that prevents us from seeing other dimensions or perhaps seeing God? I mean, could there be something about our planet that's so unique that we can't see God, but everybody else, every other planet in the whole universe can, just like the planet that might have three suns never sees nighttime? Does that make sense?
Well, I'm not sure. I think we probably would all see the same thing or not see anything. And as you point out, Steve, and you point out, Jim, that 96% of whatever is out there is invisible.
That's right. I think that's a big discovery in itself.
that, you know, there's something larger here. And, you know, I can't imagine that there's some, you know, mysterious force in nature preventing us from seeing it. I think it's just simply, you know, the statement of our own ignorance at this point. That's all we know about, you know, the nature of the universe, that 96% of it is dark energy and dark matter.
I would add that it's one of the you know, the idea that there are undiscovered phenomena, I think, is clearly something that I think is the case. And one quick example, there are colors in that are on certain plants that insects can see that we cannot see in the ultraviolet, for instance. And when this was realized, folks looked at patterns on plant leaves, and lo and behold, there were all in the ultraviolet. There were these incredible patterns that no human being had ever seen. Insects had seen them until we put the proper filter on. So I'm a great believer there are phenomena out there that we're not yet aware of.
Well, here's an interesting paradox, Jim. What good would the universe be if there was no life in it? If we didn't have this awe-inspiring life to witness it?
Well, and that if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, you know,
yeah,
that's the issue. But luckily, it appears that the universe is life friendly, and at least in our little corner of it, has given birth to life and intelligence.
Windsor, Canada, we go. Joey, good morning.
Hello, I'm just calling to ask your take on the idea that the universe created beings, either us or other beings, to understand itself.
Very, very, very possible, much down the lines of what you've been saying, James.
Exactly. And in the words of Paul Davies, the real miracle is that the laws of physics have engineered their own comprehension, and we are the means of by which that comprehension is achieved. That's precisely along the lines of my thinking, what the caller just said.
Steve Martin, is the universe evolving? Is it changing?
It certainly is. And some people are speculating that maybe the evolution itself is evolving as well. In other words, it may not evolve in a uniform way throughout its entire history, but evolution itself may change. So, for example, self-awareness, you know, consciousness coming to a new dimensionality of existence in the humans might be accelerating evolution. And I think there's evidence, at least in the natural world, that evolution actually is speeding up, even in our lifetimes. So things are changing much more quickly than we think.
Final calls here west of the Rockies in Sutherland, Oregon. Russ, it's your turn.
Yeah, my theory on the total mass of everything is that there's, and from what I can tell, I sort of work on this stuff on my own, there's 12 multiverses in the same location, and we're the 11th one. I do other things. I've been working on a star drive for a long time, but I can't really get into that on the radio. But anyway, that's my shot at that. There's a total mass and whatnot.
I don't know how you came to that number. Russ, how did you?
Well, I've worked on a lot of things from way back in the 70s, and I really can't get into it all. There's something called electronegativity, and there's different wavelengths of energy, and you use alpha energy to make electronegativity, and it puts extra electrons between atoms, and it gives you a star drive that's like an anti-gravity star drive. You can do it to just about anything, but I've really said too much at this point on the radio.
Well, now, if you're going to call the radio, Rush, you got to tell us what's going on. The multiverses, Steve, we'll never know how many there are.
Well, that's true. I mean, you know, if string theory is correct, I mean, maybe there are 11 dimensions or 21 dimensions, depending on the flavor you choose. And these dimensions could be, you know, all coexisting. They could be right here. You know, there could be a parallel universe actually right, you know, in this room, and we wouldn't necessarily know it. And string theory currently isn't testable, so we don't know whether all these dimensions actually exist or not. But scientists are trying to think of experiments to try to verify, you know, are there parallel dimensions, are there parallel universes? And I think it's an open question.
James Gardner, will science get us the answers we're looking for, or will we never find them?
That's the question of all questions, isn't it? And Steve's absolutely right about string theory. It's a pretty much a purely hypothetical, theoretical, mathematics-driven concept now. But there is hope, particularly with some of the capabilities now coming online with the new large collider, Hadron Collider in Switzerland, that we may be able to get at least some hints about whether or not string theory holds water, to mix a metaphor.
See if we can squeeze in you, Brian, in Wheaton, Illinois. Go ahead real quick.
Hey, George. It's good to hear from you.
Hi.
I have a comment to make about consciousness and creation and about how all of it does not make sense. We were put here on this planet, and I have a consciousness. You have a consciousness. I assume other people have a consciousness, but I can only hear the thoughts in my own head. I cannot hear the thoughts in your head. So therefore, I cannot assume that you are conscious. Does any of that make any sense?
Well, not to me.
Not to you.
That's what are you, James? Right.
I understand that. It's kind of a far out there theory.
Well, it's a deep theory, and I just, you know, in a simplistic form, consciousness is out there that everybody can tap into, and Steve Martin, James Gardner, both of you would I think understand that.
I think consciousness is a primordial phenomenon. It's really at the heart of the way the universe functions. I think that's the teaching of quantum theory.
And there it is. James, I want to thank you for being on the show, and you too, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Good luck with both your works. James Gardner's The Intelligent Universe. Steve Martin, of course, his is Cosmic Conversations. And fascinating individuals. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasour, Tim Banal helping out on the old web, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.